Hello everyone, welcome to Chan Podcast. Here is where you learn about meditation and Chan. So, what is Chan? Chan, spelled as C-H-A-N, is the Chinese school of Mahayana Buddhism and is the originating tradition of Japanese Zen. We encourage you to learn and practice meditation with a group. If you'd like to, feel free to visit our website londonchanmeditation.org.
Recently, some of you may know, but may not, I've been doing the Tricycles March Meditation Month meetings with them, and there are two live calls. We had one live call this past Saturday, and so many questions that weren't able to get into. So I thought this is another occasion where I can answer the questions. It'll be available. Are there any Tricycle Meditator Month Meditation people here? Okay, a few. All right. So your questions will be answered. I've selected some that's important. The ones that I haven't selected, probably you can get that from online resources or books, Dharma books or something like that. All right. So let me see how many I can get through. If there are other questions that you have and we have time, then we'll answer your questions live too. So let's see the questions. All right. Okay, wondering about the spinning sensation, what I experience sometime when I deeply relaxed. And I find this quite pleasant. Dawn, Woodward. Okay. Is she online? Okay. Maybe I can say hello to you. Dawn, where are you? You want to unmute yourself? Maybe they're shy.
It won't let me.
I hear you.
Oh, okay. It wouldn't let me, but yes, I'm here.
Where are you? Oh, okay. All right. So this is actually very common, very common. There you are. Hi. Okay.
Hi. Yeah. Let me unmute for a bit.
Yeah. So it's quite common, especially when one is relaxed. Now this occurs two basic camps of people that have experience like this, okay? One is folks that have energy block. So the body rocking is actually old injuries, you know, muscle, body, bones healed. But there's a block there. So the energy trying to flow through the body, they're trying to kind of go through it. And it creates this rocking sensation. And that may not be too pleasant sometimes. Depends on the person. Now, there's another type. It's just that the energy itself, for whatever reason, the practitioner experienced this rocking, and it's rhythmic.
Mm-hmm.
Rhythmic. It's pleasant, and every time, like 10-15 minutes into the sitting, this begins. So often the practitioner are kind of, oh, how wonderful, and they begin paying attention to this, and they just kind of, that's you, right?
That's
so they kind of just kind of rest in this, right? That's fine, but from the perspective, no, this is just kind of physiological thing.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it leads to kind of subtle psychological, not necessarily psychological, but sometimes there are subtle undercurrent grasping present. Right? So then the mind is no longer on the method of practice, but it's on this other thing that's happening. So that's what I call, you're traveling from point A to point B, and the scenery is very nice, right? So you're like, oh, let me just hang out here and just enjoy the scenery. So we actually stop practicing, and we have habituated ourselves every time 10, 15 minutes into the sitting, we just plateau there. So now some people may be quite happy with that. That's what they want. They meditate, get to that sweet spot. That's it. So for Chan practitioners, now if my teacher were present, they would take one of these incense sticks and tap you out of that state. Why? Because in the long run, there's no real wisdom there, and it doesn't necessarily generate compassion. In other words, our full potential is not brought forth, right? How can we bring forth our full potential? You keep going, no matter what the scenery is, right? Now, once in a while, you can stop and take a look at the scenery. It's like once in a while having a little chocolate. You can taste it. It's pretty sweet, pretty good. But basically, practitioner, keep going. Keep going. Get used to the pleasant sensations and keep going even when we have unpleasant experiences that may arise. So.
So, should I like open my eyes or make an effort to let or just mentally let it go?
Don't try to mentally let it go because that will end up like talking to yourself. Okay, let go, let go. So what we do is we just love our method more. That will keep the freshness. Love our method. Nothing else really matters. The method of practice. So the method, meditation on the breath, and the present moment, and this grounded embodied experiencing merging to one, then naturally, before you know it, you will discover yourself walk right past that scenery. You don't even notice if you're moving or not. Why? The mind is, resting on that clarity, on that actual sensation. So,
Thank you
yeah. Okay. All right, next question. Can you speak on the issue of traumatic experience and the body reactivating that? Okay. Anonymous. Very important question. Very important question. Many people are afraid to be in their bodies because they have had some traumatic experiences or just difficulties, some past experience. So when they sit, it stirs up some issues. Or one of their coping mechanisms in life in general is just to disassociate from their body, from their feeling. And when they touch that, it's too difficult for them. So in that case, you can meditate emotion, get the body doing something you like. I don't know, dancing, singing, exercising, just to get in tune with the body, but not so frontally. Like get the body to do something, right? Do some activities. And then just kind of be with the body doing that. right? So you're not completely facing the body and the things that it may arise. Getting used to being in tune with the body, and this involves being in tune with bodily movements, bodily sensations, the shifting of bodily weight, especially for dancers, very in tune with the postures of the body, the shifting of bodily weight, and how that affects our balance, and doing that as part of the practice. You could be washing dishes. You don't have to be dancing. You could be washing dishes. You could be doing some physical activity, exercising, stretching, yoga. So you turn all those occasions into opportunity to engage with the body and to use the body as a method to be one, right? Developing a kind of congruence between body, heart, mind. And in time, you can slowly incorporate sitting meditation. Some people are just not able to sit still. Fine. Engage in some activity. Make those part of your meditation practice. Once you begin to engage with the body in sitting meditation, do go for quality instead of quantity. Okay? So short quality periods of relaxation, which is very helpful, beneficial, no matter what we do. And then after that, just get up. Until you feel comfortable. You have to feel comfortable sitting, being in the body, sitting. And if emotions arise, you ground yourself in relaxing. Open yourself as much as you could while being comfortable, these emotions. The most important thing is, do not rely on ruminations, your narrative of how things are, drawing conclusions from these emotions to feel, allowing the emotion to kind of bring you somewhere. Just simply experience them in an embodied way. Allow them to flow through you. If you feel crying, if you feel like tearing, allow them to flow through and ground yourself. If it's a little bit overwhelming, simply you say, okay, put it aside. You do a massage and you get up. Right? But more and more, little by little, you allow these memories to come up. First, they appear as memories, and accompanying them, all of the host somatic experiencing, the tightening, tension, different regions of the body, right? Feeling, for example, some people feel alone, feel kind of abandoned or fear. It's actually in certain regions of the body. So, and accompanying with that is these ruminations, memories. See them for what it is. Trust yourself. Be vulnerable, open to them. You can always just get up. There's always a fallback, right? Little by little, as long as you don't solidify, reify these notions, and you're on the method, what is that? Open, ground, relax, allow them to flow through. Without drawing conclusions, I am this, I tend to be that, here comes again. Nothing like that. As long as you don't do any of that, and just continue with the method, you will discover something amazing. And that is, there's so much resilience in you. Nothing can break you. No trauma of the past can break you. Now, if you start to follow the rumination, discursive thinking, and the conclusions that you're drawing, right, in the memory, visions, rehearsing all those things again, if you're encapsulated by that and you kind of follow that, then you feel like you're broken, right? Or you're breaking. But if you don't, you will start to build in embodied personal experiencing of how you go through these states. And you discover that you're still here. Again and again and again. And then you discover that they will have less and less and less hold on you. Does that make sense? So, you must gain personal experience. Don't be in the head. Ground yourself, anchor yourself in the body, open, vulnerable. And then let it flow through you. Okay. Next question. I notice you invited relaxation, which is different to being with what is present. If I notice tension, is it not desirable to be with the tension rather than make an effort to let it go? Michelle Lee, I don't know if she's Michael Lee. I don't know if you're present or not, but good question. Now, there's a lot of talk on being present to what is in spiritual circles. Right. Are we on? Okay. There's a lot of talk on we have to be present to what is. Don't try to fix, don't try to do anything. Yes, in principle, in principle. But at the working end of practice, the reality of what is actually happening is that what is present, you know, if it's tension, there's emotion, just be present with it. It's actually reification. It's actually grasping onto that. Because by nature, all of these feelings, all of these things, whatever experience that you have, they liberate themselves in their own accord. So something, someone is actually holding on to them to be present to it, actually perpetuating it. Because their true nature is to liberate themselves. Allow, like what I was saying, allow it to flow through. Allow it to flow through. So even in the midst of tension or psychological tension, discursive thinking or physical tension, even in the midst of that, right, the practitioner, at least Chan practitioner, we experience that as freshness. Moment to moment, there's a newness quality, even to scatter thoughts. Wandering thoughts, right? Now the fact that, oh, I should be present with the thoughts, with the feelings and whatever memory you're having, that's actually, you've lost the method. You're actually just attaching to that. Right? Now, inviting relaxation is simply just being with, really, genuinely being present to what is actually happening. And in that presence, there's neither grasping nor rejecting. There's freshness. So, like sometimes I say, to be truly present, you have to be absent. All of our baggage, all of our, you know, ruinations, all of our discursive thinking. Me, I, mine. If we really want to be present, it's absent. Now, if someone uses relaxation in an effortful way to somehow suppress, we just have to be honest with ourselves whether we're doing this or not, to suppress, to make the tension, make the discomfort emotionally, physically, to go away, then that's just another kind of spiritual bypassing. It's just another kind of attachment, right? Attachment, opposite detachment, sometimes there's a kind of valence to that as pessimistic. Actually, detachment is our true nature. There's freshness, newness with every new beginning, every moment. So much potential, so much freedom there. Right? Why? Self-referencing, having, lacking, wanting, needing, you know, preferring this, avoiding that, it's actually absent. Right? So being fully present is it aligning ourselves with our true nature, which is freedom. Now, the relaxation is just a natural expression of that. So if we, the more we practice, if we become more tense, then probably we're doing something wrong. Right? The more we practice, the more we're at ease, authentically. You know, the discomfort, still relax about it. Right? Discomfort, embarrassment. I was giving a class today on death and dying, talking to people who have retired and so on. I was telling them, you know, being present, you know, we're talking about having a good death. Does not mean, you know, you're kind of aged until your old age and dying with perfect presence, consciousness, and all that. It's just being human, authentic, completely present, losing control, still okay, still okay. That's practice, a kind of relaxation, if you will. So if we start to make relaxation into a thing and then use it to suppress something else, then that's problematic. But our true nature is just freedom, which expresses relaxation. And so we kind of cultivate that. Does that make sense? Yes? No? Okay. All right. Next question. Do you think it is a good idea to prepare for death and rebirth by studying books like the Tibetan Book of the Dead and related teachings? Do we need to know what to do during the process of dying? Anonymous. Studying is for here. Satisfying our discursive thinking, our prefrontal cortex, reasoning. Many things in life go beyond reason. We can't reason our way into being relaxed, right? We can't reason our way being grounded, practiced. We actually have to practice. Does that make sense? And practice, how we die is how we actually live. The way we practice, the way we integrate practice into daily life, the way we are present to ourselves, present to others, the way we're practice in line with our true nature, which is freedom. So, Tibetan Book of the Dead, very good, but it's heavily rooted in a particular culture, in a particular culture, and the cultural expressions are so foreign to the West. You know, dying process, disintegration of the body, the way they describe the disintegration of the four elements, earth, water, fire, wind, you know, solidity, fluidity, you know, heat, you know, so on. It's so culturally bound, you know, and the different disillusionment of a conscious state is so culturally bound to, you know, different color light. Don't go after the yellow light. Go after the white. White light is not good. Pass through this, pass through that. It's really not applicable. Now, are you going to experience that? Is everyone going to experience that? No. Of course not. Right? It's a practice. it's a practice, so we engage in practice, so we reach a kind of groundedness, alignment with our nature, not attached to things. Does that make sense? So it's an expedient means. The specificity of what we experience, it doesn't happen like that. Right? Why? Because we're embodied cultural beings as well. We're social beings. So upbringing in the West, we'll have our own baggage, will mediate the way we experience death. We're not going to see different lights or different color. That color means this. This color means that. Don't go past this light. Go to the third light and then go through that. No. Right? No. Is it useful? If you practice it, maybe it's useful because you're practicing, you see? Now you can practice something else, which will also be useful. Maybe someday I'll make available the series of courses that I'm teaching. This course that I just mentioned before, Living and Dying from a Chan Perspective, available on YouTube. Well, I have to maybe get permission or something. So let me look into that. Okay. The most important part is practice. It's practice. Okay. All right. Let's see if there's anything else with that question. Can I go back to the question? If there's any other component to that question. Do we need to know what to do during the process of dying? Right. So knowing the map, right? The map is not the territory. You hold a map, you study the map all your life, and you say, okay, make a left turn here, make a right turn here. When you're actually doing it, it's not going to be like that. Right? Right? If someone says, go to New York, Brooklyn, go past two lights, make a right, go there. If a map, it doesn't look nothing like that. Right? Same thing. The most important part is not the cerebral intellectualization, conceptual understanding. The most important part is actually embodying the practice. Being able to, through practice, be free from the discursiveness, the narrating, monologuing mind that push and pulls and draws us. Being able to not suppress and not follow and still maintain presence, clarity. Now, how do you do that? You need a method. So as long as you have a method of practice, you die with a method. I'll let the method take you, or whatever method that may be. Okay, so during the day, every day, we engage in practice. We ground ourselves in the method. And then you can do the next step. Right? What's the next step? When you're sleeping, those kind of in-between states, right? When you're sleeping, when you're kind of losing consciousness and so on, you're also grounded. So when you're sleeping, you're also clear. If you have dream, you're clear you're having dreams. And then if it's not too good a dream, you can change. Come back to the method. Right? So during the day, you gotta, be able to ground yourself. At night, when your conscious control, the prefrontal cortex, is not really the boss, it's not so controlled, you are still clear. And then we talk about dying. Right? So get those two down first, and then we can talk about dying. If you get those two down, you don't have to worry about dying. All right, next question. All right. I am using the instruction from Method of No Method. That's a book by my teacher on silent illumination. I find that at various points of my mind becomes immobile while I check my when I check by feeling into my body for my lower dantian, solar plexus, abdominal area, I find that I was not in my body, but rather had a kind of screensaver. The immobility experience has become a flag for checking physical presence. Doing this creates more movement in the practice. Is that correct method? Second, when I am focusing intensely into the body, it creates a kind of absent-minded shutness. I don't know what shutness means. What does shutness mean? Is that a typo? Whatever that is. For example, the bird song outside. How should I open to the ongoing outside experience? All right, that's a question that's caused by the way my teacher taught in that book, which I have chucked it out the window, okay? So the way my teacher taught in the 70s was, Methodist method, truly, non-abiding. But none of his students were able to do that. So he started to provide stages of practice so people to hang on to. And so I'll answer the second question first. So that people start to attach to the stages. So the first stage is relaxing the body and mind. Second stage, unification of body and mind. So my teacher basically provided signposts to look for, to know what to do. He provided a map, right? So unification of body and mind. What does that really mean? Experientially, just means that the body no longer poses a problem. You're on the method. You're on the method. The body, physiologically, there's experience of lightness, pliancy. Right? The mind is just at ease on the method. Body, method, present moment, one. Okay, I'll say it again. Present moment, body, and the experiencing of the method, these three are not three things. They become one. That's what's meant by body, a body, mind become one. The next stage is body or self and the environment become one. Now, we usually experience things such that we have a very clear sense of me, I, mine, even spatially here, and then all of you are out there. Well, there's space, everything out there. So there's a very clear sense of boundary. And it's grounded, and there's that's kind of solidity. And we relate to others like that. And there's a giving rise to a strong sense of subject object. Now, in meditation, because the sense of subject object is so tethered to thoughts, actually words and language. Once the mind becomes concentrated and unified with the method, in the present moment, the discursive level of the mind actually diminishes. And that opens up to a sense of not so clear boundary between I'm over here, the bird song is over here. And a sense of directionality that we feel and we experience. Sound of car, birds over here, someone talking over here, I'm spatially over here, and this is my cushion, and that's the other room. So, this kind of directionality, which is actually subtle wandering thoughts. Now, when the mind concentrates, this discursive layer of thinking actually vanishes, just disappears, because the mind is on the method, you see? Nothing else matters, just on the method, 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 method. Hence, experientially, you feel there's no more kind of directionality. It's just the presence of sound. And in fact, there's a kind of connection that you feel, almost like an embodied connection. with the sounds, with the forms, and just kind of part of you. That's the stage of unification of self and others. And we see this in other religions too, like St. Francis. St. Francis in the Catholic tradition, talking about brother, sun, moon, the birds. That's actually a religious unification. Self and others become one. Now, Chan practice, Buddha Dharma practice, continue to go. Right? We don't really stop there. Why? Because the sense of self is still there. It's just the self is not the individual self anymore, but it's this embodied, environmental, unified self. Right? So it's like, you are me. Right? Everything is me. So a lot of religions actually emerge from, you know, charismatic, you know, teachers, prophets, you know, that have these experiences. But because the self is there, there's always subtle forms of duality, right? And there's always the presence of subtle attachment. So when push comes to shove, when one is threatened, that kind of self will manifest, right? So you have to kind of conquer. You have to become me, right? Otherwise, I destroy you. Normally, people don't say that, but the sense of self is still there. So, but the Dharma says that self itself is an illusion, right? Self come into being through grasping. So it's not the self that grasp, that identify. It's actually through grasping the self come into being. So when this kind of self-referential tendency to grasp and reject, sense of having, sense of lacking, actually penetrates through, right? Shatters, then one are kind of reborn, you may say. To the experience of selfless being, selfless. So that would be awakening, right, from the Buddha Dharma perspective. Now, all the intellect, still there. Your name, still there. Your memory, everything is very useful. Except the grasping is gone. So thoughts, words, language, feeling, that's not the problem. Our personal history, that's not the problem. The problem is this perpetual sense of self-referentiality that filters everything. Right? That disappears. Boundaries are still there, but you no longer assume this, this grasping. Right? So what happens then? The function, the freedom, and function of true wisdom manifest. So whatever is needed, what can be done, what could be done, what should be done, automatic response. Without, you know, maybe I shouldn't do it, having, lacking, me, I, mine. Right? So kind of response would be what Buddha Dharma calls compassion. Not the kind of compassion that let everyone step over you, but the kind of compassion that's not self-referential. Right? So it's other-based, without really polarizing or othering people as other. It's just others. So just this connection. That's why wisdom is connected to compassion. Right? Compassion is simply the automatic response. Spontaneous response of selflessness. Selflessness is not a scary thing. It's how we truly are. It's our true nature. We're already free. So, many words for that. Emptiness. Prajna. Wisdom. Buddha nature. All these. Nirvana. All these different terms actually refers to the same thing. And that is selfless wisdom. And the response out of that is compassion. Why? It's not self-referential. So what is it then? Connections without a reference point. So The second question, that's a long-winded way. The second question about not seeing, is it wrong if I kind of don't hear the birds? I'm kind of in this stagnant. Can you post the question again? Yeah. You know, focusing intensity on the body, it creates a kind of absent-minded shutness. If I'm understanding the word, which I don't know what that word means, maybe a kind of closure, right? Because what follows, pull up, right? The bird song, last line, yeah. Outside, you're not aware of that. Should I open kind of purposefully to the ongoing outside experience? That is a question that comes from this kind of stratified notion that actually my teacher used as an expedient means. So don't attach to that. These are just signposts. Everyone's experience is different. Right? Now, naturally, if the way we use the method is concentration-based, naturally, you won't hear the external environment. Okay? Silent illumination in its purest form is just the expression of wisdom and compassion. It's just selfless engagement, connection. It's about relationships. So the kind of cultivation of the mind that in practice for the practitioner, it's not a kind of one-pointedness of mind. It's a kind of openness. Openness, openness, just being present, present, present. And then self drops away. So if we focus on something, make the body into a thing, you know, reify into a thing and then focus on it, and of course you're not going to hear the bird song or the environment. You're not going to have that connection because the natural course of a method like that, the kind of concentration, kind of shamatha, single-minded concentration method, the scenery is just not going to be kind of a kind of connection. The scenery is just going to be shutness, I guess, if you call it. I still don't know what that means, but kind of a kind of narrowing, right? So this relates to another person's question about body as a thing, right? You don't attach the body as a thing. It's not a thing. It's the flavor of groundedness. This embodied experiencing of groundedness, and it's the whole earth connected. Not that you visualize the earth, just connected. This kind of grounded solidity. Through this experience, the breath. Through this experience, sitting. Through this experience, other methods that you practice. Then the body and mind will become one very quickly. This is the way I teach it. Right? So you're not kind of disassociated from the body, and then kind of resort to this head space. Right? So the present moment, the body, the mind, the three become one in this freshness of this moment. Right? And as one continues, you know, with the breath will cease or become very faint, subtle. Then what's left? Freshness of this embodied experience. Naturally, one segue into a kind of formal practice of silent illumination. That is just sitting, which I call embodied experiencing. Embodied experiencing. Because the corporeal, somatic experience of being present is still there. The mind is with that and is open. Right? Now, what happens when the body disappears? The body disappears, what's left? Freshness. Then one aligns oneself with the nature of mind, right? With the nature of who we are. This freedom, freshness, freshness. I usually don't like to use the word clarity because a lot of spiritual circles They talk about clarity, naked awareness, no mindfulness, and all this kind of thing. It becomes so vague that no one knows what they're talking about. So, and then people end up making clarity into a thing, right? Because attachment's there. We have this natural tendency to make a thing out of everything. So they make it into a thing and then clear, clear, clear. So they have simulated a clarity mind and they locked onto it like a method, right? Like a thing. They make clear into a thing, right? That's not right. That's not right. So instead of being in line with our freedom, they've kind of narrowly tethered themselves to some altered state of consciousness. So the point is not altered state of consciousness. The point is being free, which is already present within each of you. So I have a couple of talks on silent illumination floating around on YouTube. You can consult that. And there are some related videos. Direct contemplation, being present, and something else. You can kind of search. So hopefully, exploring a little more, watching these videos. Once this video is out, you can kind of watch it again, think about it, and then experimenting it, and hopefully that will open up to a new way of practicing silent illumination. All right, we got still got time. Number six. Sometime I'm able to reach that peaceful meditative state, and it is wonderful. My question is that the point, or am I supposed to be going somewhere else? Holding others, ending love, sending, okay, sending love, opening to an action plan, so on. Meditation means different things to a lot of people. It's not to say one is correct or another one is wrong. Depends on what you're looking for. If you just want that chocolate, every time 10, 15 minutes into the sitting, you're going to get your chocolate, get that sweet spot, and enjoy. So get that peaceful spot. That will probably not resolve the problem of grasping, rejecting, craving, and aversion, all the different root causes of our anguish. Probably not. We're just kind of perpetuating it, or we're sustaining it. So maybe we get our pleasure before we have learned meditation from some material things. Now we have learned meditation, we're just going to graft that same tendency right onto our meditation. So it becomes the same thing that we're kind of seeking, right? For satisfaction. So you'll have to see what you want out of it. And we have to look deeply within ourselves to face our anguish, our difficulties, and see what can be do about it. Can be done about it. Now, it's not to say that no, that's not what we're supposed to be doing, these blissful states. We have to keep going so we can get somewhere. It's not to say we have to get somewhere. The whole project of getting and losing, having and lacking, that whole project is the cause of our problem. But if we don't practice, then we perpetuate the problem, right? So it's not about kind of knowing it intellectually. It's on an emotional level, the core of our being, whether we perpetuate are suffering or not. Right? And Buddha Dharma provides a path. So understanding where we're at, what needs to be done, what can be done, and then we do it. There's infinite, infinite possibilities of spiritual experiences, depth, kind of profound depth. None of them are worth chasing after, seeking. Yet, we practice diligently. And they may arise. Good, keep going. They may arise, keep going. We don't seek if we're diligent. And then more and more, we align ourselves. We discover where we're at. Happier, freer. Nothing sticks. And when we are with other people, completely present. And we don't think, you know, I shouldn't be present. I want to go back to my sitting meditation. Then you know that there's some kind of attachment there. Right? So no separation. Right? Meditation and then dealing with life. Complete engagement. That's freedom. Right? So there's a lot more that can be said. I just need to explore more. All right, next. How do we prevent being in the body from becoming a mental fixation? Also, how can we keep our energy up to maintain great fascination and clarity? Do we have a quick phrase that you feel encompasses the whole process that we can repeat to bring us back if we get swept away? Noah Beck. I don't know if Noah's. Leave that question up because there's like three parts. I want to see it. All right. So, mental fixations. Yep, that is a problem because we tend to make a thing out of everything. Everything come through us, we make a thing out of it. So, of course, when we meditate, we make the body into a thing and we fix it. Just have to notice that. Notice this tendency within us, how we make everything into a thing. That's just a very colloquial way of saying, you know, the Buddhist lingo for attachment. So, it's not to say we don't care. Fully present, allowing everything to be, to change. With great potential. Right? Same thing with the body. So there's a liberating, there's a freeing element. That is freshness. Don't make freshness into a thing and we kind of lock onto it, keep the energy up so we can kind of maintain it. You know, it's a kind of openness of heart. It's an attitude that we bring, that we cultivate. Then we begin to give room, a lot of space to all the things that may manifest. Right? Of course, I'm using the metaphor of space. Right? Don't make it like just space. Okay, I have to visualize space. No, right? It's a metaphor that we give a lot of room. There's a lot of freedom. Allowing people, allowing states, allowing body to be what it is, allowing ourselves to be what it is, allowing this moment to be what it is. That's a kind of freedom. That's a kind of freedom. That is a kind of relaxation. So it's a kind of attitude that we bring. And this relates to the first question, actually, in a kind of tangential way. How can we keep the energy up to maintain that fascination and clarity? Actually, if we don't try to maintain that fascination and clarity, we just have to experience. It's already here. It's our true nature, right? To that openness, that freshness. Right? Even when we have a wandering thought, clarity is there. Even when we experience something else, new beginnings are there, ever present. So it's a matter of, it's a path of recognition, as opposed to a path of transformation, changing from point A to point B. I'm kind of using this metaphor. I don't know if you understand what I'm saying. Right? You just need to recognize it. Right? Have the clarity to recognize it. And clarity is already there, right? Even amidst wandering thoughts. Right? Now, that said, there is a physiological component to our being. So sometimes the bodily fatigue takes over the clarity of our mind. Okay? So you're not going to be clear. You're going to be hazy. There's going to be dullness. But our attitude that we train ourselves is still there. The attitude of openness, the attitude of developing this new beginning, recognizing. So that can still be there. Right? So no matter what things come up, so sometimes I use the analogy of the spaciousness of the room versus furniture. Usually we're just so locked onto the furniture. We're caught up with the furniture. We don't actually see the spaciousness of the room. So the spaciousness, it's always there. It doesn't matter whether the room is cluttered, a mess, or spick and span. It doesn't really matter from the perspective of the spaciousness of the room. Right? So ever present. In fact, it's precisely because of the empty nature of our mind, of our being, that things can change. Furniture can actually be there. Right? So hope that answers your question. And as for the third part of the question, do we have a quick phrase that you feel encompasses the whole process that you can repeat, kind of bring ourselves, remind ourselves back? Now, some of my students use some phrases. They found it useful, such as, and they use this to bring themselves back. New beginnings. They do that. Or it's all good. The things that I often say. What they say? Here comes another furniture, right? Don't suppress the furniture. It's your room. It's not in my room. So it's part of you. So don't suppress it. Don't try to chuck it out the window. It's part of you. So you accept it. You embrace it. Right? But you're not defined by it. Right? Oh, here comes the furniture. Right? Some people use that. You may use that in the beginning. It's like a crutch. Kind of quick phrase to bring yourself back. But don't make that into a thing. Right? You have to kind of you use it so you can bring yourself back to the present, but don't use it to subtly suppress thoughts, get away from different states. Okay, don't use it to do that. Accept everything, and ground it, anchored in the practice, in your method. Okay. In time, you don't have to use and rely on words and language anymore. In the beginning, yes, but later you won't have to. Okay. All right, 9 o'clock. So, how many questions left? One. Let me see the question. Yeah, this relates to the kind of things that come up, longing, fear. Allow it to grow through. Allow it to grow through. Right? This question is kind of answered indirectly by the first question. So, all right. Thank you for giving me this opportunity to share. I hope to see you in person someday. Those of you on the tricycle, I'll see you the next live chat. But next week, I think they're releasing another recording. Today they have released it, right? So it's about kind of breathing in an embodied way. Now, this may be different than the way you usually practice meditation on breath. So the way that I teach with Chan approach is more this embodied experiencing of the breath, here. And then when this is gone, sensation, go down to here. When this is gone, segue directly into embodied experiencing of sitting. And then if the body's gone, then we'll deal with that with the third week. Okay. All right. Take care.